Hey, welcome into the Big Ten Huddle. I'm your host, JR. I've got a lot to talk about going on in the Big Ten. We got Zach Guggenheim of Big Ten Football Talk with us back here. He is back from his vacation. He is no longer away from us. He is here with us tonight. Zach, are you refreshed? Are you glad to be back? How you feeling?
Dude, I was so refreshed until I heard the abrasive voice of Paul Feinbaum when I turned on ESPN for literally 2 minutes. And then I was brought back to the worst place in the world, which was ESPN. No, I'm kidding. It wasn't that bad. But no, it's great vacation. Good to be back. It's game week, man. We got a top five matchup with the Buckeyes and the Hoosiers this week. I just recorded an episode with Sammy from Hoosier Huddle about the Hoosier success, which got Cignetti news. He's got an extension. So it's great. I feel everything is good. And Philip knows ESPN stinks, just like the NCAA stinks, just like the SEC stinks. So it's a great
We're going to get into it. Don't worry. It will be a topic of discussion tonight. So we also got Billy Tuesday here with us. Evening, gentlemen. Evening, Billy. We're so glad you're here with us.
Thank you, Billy, for being here.
Yes, we're so glad you're here. Thanks for being here, Billy. We're at this point with Philip now. We don't even have to say hi to Philip. We just come in, we trash ESPN and the SEC, and we're off and running, you know?
Yes.
Terry, cue the Jaws music. Here we come. You could say that about the Big Ten or Indiana. Both would suffice here in this situation. So Zach, Terry called in on the Ohio State call-in show, and nice. He gave it to Juck a little bit. It was pretty entertaining.
Nice. Would we say that Cignetti is the shark rest of the Big Ten?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We need to get him a shark costume.
Yeah, or at least a shark hat or something. Yeah. Big fin on the top.
Yeah.
Gonna need a bigger horseshoe. I like that, Terry. That's fantastic. I love that Terry's getting into the trash talk of it. I love it.
That's fantastic.
Billy says Feinbaum the Ferengi? What is that? Ferengi? Is that from Star Trek?
I
think that's from Star Trek.
Is it?
I think so. It's impossible to listen to. Now that you mention it, he does kind of look like that. I don't want to get too much into somebody's appearance, but
yeah, it's that guy.
Yeah. Yikes. Good one there, Billy. Philip says, I might just have to come on one of the.
We really should do a call-in show for the Big Ten Huddle at some point.
We should. I've been thinking about what we want to do for members at some point, and I think that doing some kind of like member meetup once a month or something like that would be good to do. I just have to find something else. Like, I don't think a member meetup is worth $2 or $3 a month. So I want to do something else for them, but we'll get memberships at some point and we can do some stuff like that. So, I know you were waiting for this, Zach. John Jacobs, Kent State, 0-10. Zach, I wanted to surprise you. I have a stat for you. Stat for you. You ready? Kent State, 0-10, is the only winless team in college football. They have outscored Florida State 143-31. Put some respect on the Flash's name.
Okay, but here's the question. How many points has Kent State allowed? Does that stat out?
We don't get into that. Don't get into that, Zach. That's not what we get into.
That's fair. Oh, John Jacobs, it's going to be like 2047, and you're going to be like, Kent State's 0-430 since you covered him or something like that. And it's great. I love it.
Oh, boy. Well, everybody, we have a lot to get to tonight. So I would love to just go through the chat and talk about Paul Feinbaum's ears and Kent State and all that stuff. That would be awesome. But we do have a lot to get to tonight. You know, there's actual Big Ten news to talk about. We're not even going to be able to fit in Kirk Cignetti's $8 million a year contract, which is huge news. Great for the Hoosiers. Do you have anything you want to say about it real quick, Zach, before we get into the show?
Well, I'll just say this. It's not just great to have Cignetti. I think something that Sammy, in my conversation with him from Hoosier Huddle, there were some guarantees about the program moving forward that I think are really important, like upgraded facilities, larger salary pool for the assistants. Like, I think the key is not just that you get Cignetti, but you get his vision for the program moving forward, which I think is huge because you're investing in the program long term.
Well, and you're investing in Cignetti building that program, not just with the players, but just everywhere. And I think that's the difference. I see a lot of people talking about this as like, oh, this is Mel Tucker 2.0.
No, this is far from Mel Tucker.
In my opinion. Kirk Cignetti is coming in with a lot of experience. He's coming in with a vision. He is coming in. I mean, he was doing everything possible to get that fan base riled up, to get that fan base to believe in the team. I never saw that from Mel Tucker, you know, and I'm not trying to disparage the guy, you know, whatever. He's gone and doing whatever. I don't even know what Mel Tucker's doing anymore. Whatever. He disparaged himself enough. I don't need to talk, you know, disparage him. But at this point, like, I think the comparison of Mel Tucker to Kurt Cignetti is so lazy that if you make it, I'm like, okay, you just don't know what you're talking about.
You don't get it. Yeah. No, that's well said, JR.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, I cue the nicknames for Mel Tucker that I can't bring up on the screen, but, yes, I figured they'd come into the chat there eventually once I mentioned them. All right, Zach, let's talk about our first topic here. We got Phil Longo out at Wisconsin. He is no longer there. Zach, I think that this didn't shock people that it happened. I think the bigger shock was the timing of it happening. I was listening to a lot of Wisconsin guys talking about this, and they were just more shocked that it happened with two games left in the season. And honestly, I give credit to Luke Fickell. I think that this was a bold move. I think this is something that you had to do if you wanted the fan base to really think that you were serious about getting to a bowl game and making it happen. I did kind of question if maybe it was more Braden Locke than Phil Longo, but even if it was, I went back to it. Phil Longo never chose to change his backup quarterback. He went an entire season with Braden Locke as his backup, and he decided to keep him as his backup for the next year, which, I mean, look at what Oregon did. Oregon didn't like their backup situation, so they went out and got two quarterbacks out of the transfer portal.
Yeah.
Why didn't Phil Longo do that? Why didn't Wisconsin do that? You know, if you don't believe in Braden Locke, why aren't you doing that? You know what I'm saying? What do you think?
Yeah. No, I mean, the fact is, it feels like he's regressed this season. You know, last year, now it's limited stats, but 5 touchdowns to 1 pick. This year, 9 touchdowns to 9 picks. So, like, I don't think Braden Locke has improved. Now, granted, there's more of a volume there, but he just has not been competent. And if you knew that going into this season, you didn't just need one quarterback. You needed multiple quarterbacks to bring in. You brought in Tyler Van Dyke, who I'm still skeptical if that would have fixed the situation the way he looked the first couple games. Now, I know he probably needed it some time, but just the way he looked, I was like, there was no guarantee that this was going to work. I think the timing, I like the timing for a couple reasons. One, yes, you want to make a bowl game, but what's really important is that you get first shot at the offensive coordinator of your choice. And so you're kind of getting ahead of everybody. So that's one thought. I think the second thing is that what Wisconsin proved over the last few weeks is that they never needed to move from their bread and butter. They just needed to enhance it. Phil Longo was an air raid guy. They were moving more to power. If you're moving more and you're shifting philosophies, you don't keep the guy who specializes in the thing that is actually not good for you. You got to move on. And so they, you know, they got through the toughest stretch of their games. You know, they played Penn State, they played Oregon. That, you know, they kept it close with Oregon, not because of their offense, but because of their defense. And because I think honestly, Oregon was a bit fatigued from all the travel. And you know, good for them. They kept it close. They look like they've improved. But the reality is they need to move more to being a power team with good to great playmakers on the outside and a great playmaker at quarterback. They think they have their quarterback in the future and the freshman they recruited. Now go get the guy who's going to make your running game which is what Wisconsin football has always been about. Get those big nasties up front, get your running backs and go to work. And now upgrade your quarterback and wide receiver position. Go get an offensive coordinator that's going to make that happen.
Yeah, I think there were positives to what Phil Longo brought. I think that the offensive line played very well, at least pass blocking wise. I think there was some left to be desired run blocking wise, but I think that the offensive line pass blocking was very good. And I think that was one of the reasons why Braden Locke was able to have success this season, is because he did have a lot of clean pockets and the ability to throw from them. So I do give him credit there, but you know, it's really, really tough, because do I think it was more Phil Longo or do I think it was more Braden Locke? At the end of the day, I honestly think it was more Braden Locke, because you look at what Phil, the hand that Phil Longo was dealt, it was, and please understand, I'm not disagreeing with the firing here. I think the firing was the right decision with everything else that was going on. I'm just saying that, like, Phil Longo was dealt a very difficult hand, to where his very first year, Braylon Allen hardly plays. He's injured. Tanner Mordecai is in and out of the lineup all year. He's injured. And then you come back the next year, Ches Malusi, he's away from the team. And what, for whatever reason, he's injured. I forget exactly why that happened, whether he was injured or whether he just couldn't be there anymore. And then Tyler Van Dyke is out, third game of the year. Now, the offense didn't exactly look great before that, but it didn't look great after that either. It looked even worse because you have Braden Locke in there. So, you know, I think Phil Longo had enough of a track record for me to believe that he would have got it fixed eventually if he had the right players. But at the end of the day, like, that's also a part of your job as offensive coordinator, right? Is player personnel. And that's what I'm saying with, like, if you knew Braden Locke wasn't good enough for you, you should have got somebody else. And so that's why I'm saying that I do agree with it. But I do think it's unfortunate, because I would have liked to see what Phil Longo could have done with a fully powerful quarterback and running back together all season long.
Yeah. I think maybe, could I maybe nuance that a little bit too?
Yeah,
I think you're bringing it out. There are some firings where it's just gross incompetence, right? Alex Grinch, I feel like, is a really good, he's an easy mark. But like, he just was not good at his job. And you saw that everywhere he went. He was not a good defensive coordinator. I think Phil Longo is a good offensive coordinator, but I think philosophically it wasn't a great fit. And it was only going to be a great fit if you had the right personnel, and that was going to take a while. And so even with, I think you're right. He was dealt a really bad hand, and I think that only magnified the situation a bit more. But I think philosophically, I think this is not just, this is more of a philosophical shift for Wisconsin than it is a Phil Longo is a bad coach. I don't think that's the case at all.
No, I agree. I don't think Phil Longo is a bad coach. I think that Phil Longo has had a long enough track record for you to give him credit and say that he is a good coach and he can do the right thing. I just think at the end of the day, this is a situation that didn't work out for him. It didn't work out for Luke Fickell. And I hear you, John, in the chat. He says Fickell could have pushed for a new QB. Why isn't it his fault? You could have. And you know, John is saying Phil Longo's scapegoat. I think you have a point there, John. Yeah. I think that a lot of these situations where the offensive coordinator gets fired, it is kind of a scapegoat situation. We always talk about it. You get one firing of your coordinators, and then after that, it's like, okay, you just can't hire guys to come in. And so this next hire for Luke Fickell is crucial. Luke Fickell definitely could have, you know, said, hey, you need to get a different backup quarterback. But I think that Luke Fickell is one of those guys where he kind of plays hands off and he lets his coordinators take care of business and do what they're supposed to do. And unfortunately for Luke Fickell in this one, I think he probably gambled and let Phil Longo do it, and it just wasn't the right choice.
Which I think, you know, I've given Luke Fickell a lot of I've criticized him quite a bit, and the reason why I commend him for this move is it was a bold move that he made. Like, it wasn't just, well, I'm just going to let things keep going as they're, like, if he could have made Phil Longo the scapegoat at the end of this season. He didn't. He waited till after almost beating the number one team in the country. And it was like, okay, yeah, this is not working. We need to cut bait. We need to figure something out. And so yes, it is, in some ways it's a scapegoat move. Like, Fickell has not done well the past 2 years, and that is obvious. But I give him credit for doing this now and not waiting to see, oh, are we going to make a bowl game? Are we not? If we don't make a bowl game, then I've got to fire someone. He's like, no, I'm putting my coaching career on the line here, because if this really backfires, we're probably going to miss a bowl and we're going to be bad next year. So like, he's taking a big risk here.
Is that the most important thing for the season, is make a bowl?
No.
I mean, at this point, is that the most important thing? At the beginning of the year, it definitely wasn't. At the beginning of the year, you wanted to be a
8-9 wins.
8-9 win team. But
I think a bowl game's important for continuity, for sure. But the problem is with, you know, who knows what's going to happen with transfer portal and NIL and all that stuff. I think what's more important is figuring out who you want to be next year.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you lose the next two games, but you figure out your identity and who you're going to be a year from, like, next September, and you know that going into next season, that's more important than making a bowl game at this point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the streak is something that Wisconsin fans hang on to. So I think you make valid points for like the reasonable thought process of, you know, building a team. But I think from the fans' perspective, like, they really want to keep that bowl streak going.
Yeah.
And if you don't keep it going, it's like the same thing with Michigan State. Like, at some point, Michigan State is not going to make the NCAA tournament in basketball. Whether that's Tom, like, it's better if it's Tom Izzo that doesn't make it. Because if the next coach comes in and he doesn't make it, it's going to be fire and brimstone on him, right?
Yeah.
So, all right. That's all we're going to say about Phil Longo tonight. I'm actually going to get together with Rajiv. He is the Wisconsin affiliate of the College Huddle, and we are going to talk about this situation and maybe talk a little bit about, you know, maybe some future prospects of who they might hire, what they might be looking for to hire. I'm going to do a video with him tomorrow night, and then I will post that. So just be on the lookout for a video tomorrow night about Phil Longo, Wisconsin, all those things. It might just be me and Rajiv. Zach might join us too. I'm not sure. I haven't asked him about it yet, so we'll figure it out. Zach, you don't have to answer right now, but you know, send me a text.
Doing a video with Rajiv. Awesome.
If you can make it, sure. But yeah, so let's go ahead and move on for now. That's a good Phil Longo talk for it, and there will be more to come tomorrow night. All right. Zach, Purdue and Penn State. This is a game we won't spend very much time on because it was ugly, and Penn State destroyed Purdue just like every other team has so far this season. Let's start with Penn State. We're going to give a letter grade for every team tonight as we kind of recap these games a little bit. What is your letter grade for Penn State in this game, Zach?
I'll say A, and Tyler Warren gets an A+.
Yes. I'm going to give them an A- because Purdue did score 10 points on them, and Purdue scored 0 points against Ohio State and Oregon. So if anybody wants to do that fun little comparison, which is not actually accurate, I'm obviously making a joke here, but you know, there will be Big Ten fans out there like, well, I see Penn State isn't as good as Ohio State and Oregon because they may have scored 49, but they let Purdue score 10. So yeah, A. What's your grade for Purdue, Zach?
Just for the receiver not knowing where the end zone started. I mean, the whole operation gets an F.
Everything about Purdue gets an F.
Everything. Like, the grounds crew for confusing the receiver gets an F. What are we doing?
Yep. Yeah, that was ugly to watch. And it just kind of fully encompasses Purdue's season at this point. So, yeah. F for me.
Kent's in the chat, though. He makes a good point. They beat Alabama in basketball. Yeah. So
we're not grading basketball. If we were grading basketball, they'd be much better. That's the kind of SEC dominance we need to have. It just pretty did the wrong sport. So.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay, moving on from that one because there's really not a lot much to talk about.
Yeah, it's enough.
All right, Ohio State, Northwestern. Here's that. Kind of some of the same stuff. I do think this game is a bit more nuanced, but it'll be mostly the same stuff. What's your letter grade for Ohio State in this one?
I'm going to give Ohio State a B-.
Wow.
And the reason is I thought quarters 2 and 3, they looked sharp. But I thought, again, there are some things that concern me, especially with them playing Indiana next week. You know, early in the game, you know that Northwestern wants to grind out the game and like shorten it. You get them 3rd and 13 and you just let a random draw play get a first down, which extends the drive. And in a lot of ways, like if Northwestern doesn't shoot themselves in the foot, this game's like a bit closer going into halftime. So I thought there were some obviously good moments, but they were sloppy. And no, you know, I think they were trying some things. They're always trying things and stuff, but I did not think they looked sharp in the first quarter or the fourth quarter.
Yeah. First quarter, definitely were not super sharp. I do give the offense a little bit of like at least just because they only had one drive, and they did have a drive that, you know, they did almost get a touchdown on that pass. So I give them a little bit of credit there. But yeah, the first quarter I would give overall like a C minus. The rest of the game, I mean, the fourth quarter they had mostly backups in, so I'm not really going to take that against them. But the rest of the game, I'm going to give them an A just because they did dominate. Mm-hmm. So I mean, at the end of the day, I'll give them an A minus. You know, like I said, first quarter wasn't great, but guess what? The rest of the game, they destroyed Northwestern. There really wasn't anything they could do the rest of the game. They had a punt block, which was coming off a bad snap. So, you know, but they still made it happen. And yeah. So, what's your grade for Northwestern?
Probably a D. Like I thought early Northwestern did some things that, you know, I thought their defensive line played well in the first half and gave Ohio State's offensive line some trouble at times. I was about to say Mike Wright, and I'm like, that's not it. Definitely not Mike Wright. Oh my gosh. Lausch, I thought made some good plays. Again, if he plays clean ball, it's maybe a different story, at least in the first quarter or first half. At the end of the day, self-inflicted wounds is what got them in a hole, and you cannot do that against Ohio State. And so they played well in spurts, so I give them credit, but it's a D.
Yeah, I just felt like they were so awful. I mean, even in the first quarter when Ohio State was playing bad, they had missed opportunities. Jack Lausch fumbled the ball when they were driving into the red zone. I mean, there were multiple big pass plays Jack Lausch could have had to throw, and the defense wasn't able to stop Ohio State's offense there for most of the game. So, yeah, for me, I'm giving Northwestern like a D. Yeah. I don't give them as much credit as you do. I watched the game, and I'm like, this is right. Like, this is just Northwestern playing against Ohio State. Came in with a good game plan, don't get me wrong, and they excelled in the first quarter. Just I needed to see that for the rest of the game and not just for one quarter. So
yeah, the Bryce Kurtz Denzel Burke matchup does not make me feel good about Burke versus Elijah Surratt. I'll just say that.
Yeah, Bryce Kurtz and AJ Henning. AJ Henning had some plays too, but yeah, Kurtz was definitely the man. So
yeah.
All right. We'll be right back, everybody. We're going to do commercial really fast, and then we're going to get to grading UCLA and Washington. We'll be right back. Have you ever wanted to watch all 22 film, you know, that film the coaches watch? Well, now you can. Introducing the Coaches Film Room. Over at Minutes to Sports, former college coach Zach Smith breaks down film of the most relevant teams in college football with a bit of a Big Ten lead. It's not free, so you'll need to sign up for the Colonel tier, which is $25 a month, but I can attest to you that it is far more worth it than that. With about 4 to 8 games per week, this is worth so much more money, not to mention Zach's analysis, making you a smarter football fan. Go check it out. The links are in the description, minutestosports.com. You won't be sorry. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, we do want to ask you to like and subscribe if you like Big Ten content, if you like us talking about every single Big Ten team, because we do not favor certain teams. We talk about every single one of them. Please do like, please do subscribe, and that really helps out the channel, helps out the more content. And if you just hate the SEC as much as we do, we need more podcasts out there. We need more people talking about the Big Ten because ESPN is trying to monopolize it. All right, so share with your friends, get more Big Ten content out there. All right, that's my spiel for the Big Ten. Washington and UCLA. Washington wins this one 31-19. They replaced Will Rogers after two picks in the first half. Will Rogers gets benched. He didn't have a touchdown pass, but he gets benched. Damon Williams comes in, and he throws himself a touchdown pass. Only 67 yards passing, but 31 yards on the ground. He had that one run. I think it was for about 15, 16 yards. That was good. And I think Damon Williams, it was the right choice by Jed Fish. I told him in the preview. I mean, because I know he was watching. I know he was watching the show. Yes, Jed Fish, yes. Loyal listener. Yeah. We critiqued his play calling on the goal line. He's like, oh yeah, I got to listen to these guys every single week. And I told him, I said, if Will Rogers doesn't play well, you cannot be afraid to pull him. Damon Williams is your future. You need to get him out there and see what he can do. And he did just that. And Damon Williams played well. So for me, I'm actually going to give Washington a B+ in this one. They are playing at home. If they were playing away, probably would have been a D+, because Washington on the road is way different than Washington at home. But you know what? They were at home, so good game by Washington.
I'll give them an A- because they got bowl eligible, and I think that was a concern coming into the season. Is with all the turnover, are we going to actually be able to get bowl eligible? And they did it, and now they have a bye. Who knows what they're going to do with Oregon next in a couple weeks. I think that game is in Washington. Oh no, it's at Oregon. So that's going to make it tougher, but I got to give Washington credit for getting this win, and especially with UCLA surging.
You know what we have to really give Washington credit for? Two penalties.
Wow.
Only two. They've been averaging like 7 a game.
Oh my gosh. A plus.
Great job, Washington. it was actually flipped. UCLA had 9 in this game. It was interesting. UCLA outgained Washington, but the rushing struggles came back for UCLA in this one. Only 52 yards rushing. I think if you do the sack adjusted, they did. Yeah, if you had sack adjusted, they had 98, so still not 100. But yeah, it was a tough day for Ethan Garber's back there. Still played well. I mean, he still had 2 touchdown passes, no interceptions. But he had to throw the ball 44 times, and that was an issue. So for me, when I look at UCLA in this one, it was a tough game for them. They did pass the ball pretty well. Like I said, Ethan Garbers, he didn't have a very high completion percentage, so he wasn't super efficient. But overall, 2 touchdowns. I feel like this was just a game where UCLA's defense couldn't really keep up with Washington, and UCLA just kind of kept shooting themselves in the foot. Like I said, 9 penalties in this one. They were 10 for 19 on third down, so they kept getting in third down situations. Washington was only 3 of 9, but they kept shooting themselves in the foot. They kept making mistakes. 2 fumbles. They lost both of them in this one. It just was not a great day for UCLA in the execution and efficiency department. So I'm actually going to give UCLA a C in this one. Zach, what's your thoughts?
Right. I was thinking C minus. Yeah. Like I thought UCLA did some good things. It's hard because like UCLA the past few weeks has really upped its game to what I think we expected. So that, you know, the fact that they have 4 wins, this is not meant to be patronizing at all. It is fairly remarkable with what we expected out of them. And so I think to see them kind of fade this way was disappointing. So yeah, I got a C-. It wasn't abysmal like failure, but it wasn't great.
Yeah, I mean they did some things well. Like I said, 10 for 19 on third down, so they got in a bunch of third down situations. But yeah, like I said, it was the penalties a lot in this one. 4 for 5 in the red zone. So I mean they scored. But...
So they knew where the corner of the end zone was and wasn't.
Yeah, that's a big thing I hear. I hear if you don't paint the outside of your end zone and your end zone the same color, I hear that helps the receivers know where to catch the ball.
Huh. So UCLA's got, well, it was Washington. There's at Washington. But, you know, UCLA knows the layout of the stadium. So good for them. That helps. Some credit there.
That always helps. All right. We're rolling right along here, Zach. Rutgers and Maryland. Zach, this is the Rutgers we thought we would see. Not necessarily the passing game. Athan Kaliakmanis went crazy. A great game for Athan Kaliakmanis in this one. He led the team 20 for 30, 238 passing yards and two touchdowns. His QBR was off the charts in this one. Much better day from him. His completion percentage being 66% is way up from what it normally is. So for him, it was a good day. And he was helped a lot by Kyle Manungai being back. He 25 rushes for 97 yards, two touchdowns. This is what you wanted to see from a Rutgers team, right? This is what we were hoping to see all season long, but unfortunately injuries and stuff like that got in the way. I think Kaliakmanis did manage to scramble a little bit, and he was only sacked one time. So great job by the Rutgers offensive line. I mean, Maryland doesn't have a great pass rush, so, you know, it's, you know, think about that with your opponent. But overall, I was impressed by Rutgers in this one. I'll give him a B.
I mean, I wasn't here last week to recap them against Minnesota. So this is a grade for the past 2 weeks, A+. Because the reality is Rutgers was fighting for their bowl lives the past 2 weeks. And I think we both thought it's over. Like, and I don't know what they did during the bye week, but Kaliakmanis looks like a different quarterback. I mean, I know Maryland defensively is not great, but I mean, he was throwing like this last week too, and he did it without Manungai a week ago. So this is a 2 week grade. I know I'm going a little beyond, but I think it's an A+. Rutgers has salvaged their season.
Yeah, they're bowl eligible now. I don't think they're, you know, going to win two more games and get to that 8-win mark. But I mean, you know, I guess never say never. I guess they could. This is a team that we thought, you know, had the potential to be 8, 9, maybe even 10 wins. Obviously, they didn't get to the 9 or 10 win mark. But overall, I mean, Rutgers, they've turned some things around. And they're starting to have the season that most people thought they could. I mean, the expectations of 9 or 10 wins were a little outrageous, but there was a reason why it was called a dark horse. I'll just play devil advocate for a second, and then we'll move on to Maryland. The reason why I went with a B instead is because Rutgers did have 8 penalties in this game. They were only 6 for 14 on third down, so less than 50%. And what was the other thing? No turnovers, that helped. But overall, I felt like, you know, they didn't have a great defensive effort. Maryland did have 450-plus yards. They did only have 2 tackles for loss on the day. So I do critique them a bit for that. But give them credit, they came out with the win. They turned over Maryland in this one time. And Maryland just, they didn't have an answer for Rutgers. So yeah. What would you give a grade for Maryland, Zach?
Oh, man. I'll say a D. Just, I mean, blown opportunities. You're at home, which apparently home is not good for Maryland. You put Edwards out there to throw 55 times. Like, and Hemby didn't have a terrible average. 16 carries, 87 yards. I don't know what the breakdown was. But it just felt like, I don't know what Locksley, I mean, I never know what Locksley is doing anyway, but I don't know. I just feel like the game plan was not great. They missed field goals. And they let, you know, Kaliakmanis has improved, but it's like they let Kaliakmanis look like a dangerous threat. And yeah. To me, I'm like,
no pass rush. They were not able to get pressure on Athan Kaliakmanis.
Yep.
So. I think that they should have definitely leaned into the run game more. I mean, it was the beginning of the third quarter and they were actually up in this one. They scored with a 1-yard rushing touchdown by Roman Hemby. And I didn't understand getting away from the rushing attack so much. It wasn't until the fourth quarter where Rutgers goes up by 2 scores and they completely got away from the rushing attack. And even most of the fourth quarter, Rutgers wasn't scoring. I think they got 1 field goal or something like that. And it was disappointing. Are you laughing at Phillip's comment? Yeah. Hold on 1 second. My grade for Maryland in this one, what did I give them? I gave them a D in this one.
Yeah, we're aligned on that. Sorry, I cut you off with my laughter.
No, it's okay. You can read it since you find it so funny.
Is Locksley's seat getting warm other than me firing him for the 6th time this year? It's a good question. Is it? Like,
I mean, we talked about it. His buyout would indicate that it's possible, but I just don't think they'll do it. They should, but I don't think they will.
Yeah.
I think Maryland is content with just making bowl games and winning bowl games.
Yeah. And they've made a bowl game, what, the past 3 years?
They've made a bowl game ever since COVID, and they've won all of them.
Yeah.
So, yeah. What's Maryland? What's Maryland's record on the year?
4-6. They won't make one this year. Yeah. Because they got Iowa and Penn State next. And
yeah, they're not winning those.
No.
Yeah.
Maybe Iowa, if Iowa decides to lay another egg. But Iowa's on a bye. Penn State.
I think he improved all those years. That I don't think they'll fire him right now.
No.
But like I said, they should fire him because I just don't think he's good enough.
Yeah, I agree.
So
I'm firing from this for the seventh time now.
Yes.
Seventh time. So
there we go.
Yeah.
Should be the eighth. But
yeah. I gave him one reprieve when they beat USC. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they beat USC.
Don't worry. We'll talk about USC Nebraska here soon.
Oh, gosh.
Michigan State and Illinois first, though. Illinois wins this one 38-16. Brett Bielema was angry. I tell you, he was out for blood in this one, Zach. So was Luke Altmaier and the rest of the gang. They were coming out in this one. I really liked what I saw from Illinois. What do you think? What's your grade for him?
A. Yeah, Altmaier looks just so much better. I mean, and I liked him a year ago, but he was slinging the rock. He made some big time throws in this game. And I was looking at their offense next year. They lose Franklin and Bryant, but their whole line is going to come back. Their running backs are going to be back. Altmaier, I think, will be back. Like, man, I hope they get a couple of good receivers in the portal, because I think Illinois offensively could be dynamite next year, the way that they're starting to gel.
Yeah, I was really happy for Pat Bryant in this one, that he on senior night was able to have a good game. 4 receptions, 135 yards, and a touchdown. Zachary Franklin did have more receptions, but he only had 44 yards. But he did have a touchdown as well. But yeah, it was a really good day for Pat Bryant in this one, and I was glad he got that kind of recognition. Josh McCray had 9 rushes for 61 yards and 3 touchdowns. That was kind of like my key for Michigan State, was you had to stop Illinois from running the ball. Now, they did stop them from getting a ton of yards on the ground. They did get 138, which isn't, you know, a ton, but it's still enough to beat you when you're giving up more than 100 yards per game. And that's what Illinois did in this one. They scored 3 times on the ground as well. So I have to give a lot of credit here to Illinois. I think they played really well. I think they had a really good game plan. I think that they neutralized what Michigan State was able to do well, and they really attacked their weaknesses, which, go figure, Brett Bielema is a good coach, and that's what good coaches do. Mm-hmm. And I think people were down a little bit on Illinois after the Minnesota game. I don't think you should be. I just think Minnesota's a good team this year. You know, maybe they don't have the record to indicate it, but I just think they're a good team this year, and that was a good win for Minnesota. But Illinois is still a good team, and long behold, they're ranked 24th in the nation now, Zach. So good for them. I'm going to give them a B+ in this one.
Yeah, that's good.
I'm a little tougher grader than you.
Yeah. Except with Ohio State.
Yeah. Michigan State, what about them?
I'm going to go C-. I think, again, and this is at some point, Michigan State has to put together a full game. You see, I feel like we've said every week, you see the potential with Chiles. You see, like,
the ball great is so plays. Pretty coming out of his hands, man.
It is. And, like, if you could just make a highlight video, it would be amazing. The problem is that's like 15 to 25% of the time, if that. And the rest is bad. And so Michigan State, I feel like you got a grade on a curve, because we didn't expect much from Michigan State this year, but we've seen them punch up a bit at times. So I'm like bordering on the D's, but I'll be a little generous here and be C-. I'll give a C-.
Yeah, I actually wrote down C- as well. So this is one you and I agree on in this one. There was just not a rushing attack at all from Michigan State. You didn't get Nate Carter going. You didn't get Kayron Lynch Adams going at all in this one. They combined for, what was it, 14 carries for 45 yards. I mean, that's just That's not good enough. When you have 14 carries for 45 yards between your duo of running backs, Aiden Childs was running around for his life back there. Illinois has a good pass rush, and they were able to take care of business in a lot of ways, in just a lot of ways with what they were able to do against Michigan State in this one. It was kind of close there for a while. What was it in the third quarter? It was, Michigan State was actually up in the third quarter with about 9 minutes left, and then Illinois goes and scores three times. That was really when Josh McCray did his damage on the goal line with two 1 yard rushing touchdowns there, and they were able to just move the ball better. So overall, the end of the day, Illinois is just the better team, and they are more resilient till the end. So tough day for Michigan State, but I think they have promise for the future.
Better days ahead.
It's just not gonna happen this year.
Yep.
So all right, you want to do commercial or you want to talk Oregon?
We can go to commercial.
Okay, commercial really fast. We'll come back, we'll talk Oregon Wisconsin, and then we'll talk Nebraska USC, and then Matt Rhule. We'll talk about him, his future at Nebraska, and then we'll finish it out with you all's favorite, Kirby Smart's quote that he gave to ESPN after the game: the SEC stinks. That is your preview. We'll be right back. Homefield is your go-to destination for premium collegiate apparel with a passion for comfort and a flair for vintage design. Homefield brings you gear that is comfortable and stylish. With over 150 colleges to choose from, Homefield digs deep into the archives, uncovering forgotten logos, iconic mascots, and legendary moments to create one-of-a-kind apparel. Use my code TBTH for 15% off for new customers, or use my link in the description. Back here on the Big Ten Huddle, we appreciate all of you being here. Hey, go check out the basketball channel as well. You can get basketball content over there. We have one live stream a week, game recaps, all those different things going on over there as well. So go check out the Big Ten Huddle - basketball. It's the same logo as this one. It just has a basketball court in the background instead of grass. It's easy to see. You'll see it right there. Go like it. Go subscribe. Well, don't like it. You can subscribe to it and then like all the videos. Just, you don't have to watch them. Just go through and like them all. So, all right. Zach, Oregon escapes Camp Randall 16-13. Dan Lanning did his best to try and give it away, but he didn't, because Oregon's defense stood on his head and Braden Locke is just awful. We talked about it a little bit. Phil Longo definitely deserves some criticism here as well, but Braden Locke just doesn't. He is not a quarterback that's going to win any games. We saw it against Penn State. We saw it against Oregon in this one. We've seen it. Plenty of times this season. I give him a little bit of a pass in Alabama because he wasn't the quarterback that was game planning for that one and stuff. But overall, I do give Oregon a B- in this one. I felt like the defense was really, really good. So that's where I give them kind of the props, even though I know Braden Locke is not a good quarterback. I do give them props that despite Dan Lanning's poor decision making with the fake field goal and all that stuff, the defense still stood on their heads. They were able to make the stops. They were still able to do what they needed to do to win this game. But just point blank, Dylan Gabriel has to be better than 22 for 31 for 218 yards, no touchdowns and one pick. He just has to be better than that. Jordan James had a good game, 25 attempts, 121 yards and one touchdown. He had a good game, and it wasn't like any of that was off like one big, huge run. So it was consistently he was running it, 4-5 yards per carry on the game. So B- for me on Oregon. What were your thoughts, Zach?
Yeah, I agree. I think I have a B, and part of the reason why is there is a reality that this was always going to be a hard game for Oregon for the travel. We picked it preseason, right? That this was going to be the upset, that Wisconsin would beat Oregon at Camp Randall. And this is the third road trip in 4 weeks. And I just think you had other challenges, Tez Johnson out in this game. And so I agree with you holistically. Dylan Gabriel has to be better. But Dylan Gabriel on 4th and 8, making a big throw to, I think it was Ferguson. Was it Ferguson who made that catch?
I believe so. Yes.
To get down and get that game winning field goal. I mean, that's what builds momentum. Like, it's similar to the goal line stand for Ohio State against Penn State, right? It builds your confidence to do it on the road. You're tired. And so I give a lot of credit there, because it hasn't been a routine thing where they have really struggled like that. I think it's a one-off. And I think Wisconsin defensively can they can give you problems, especially if you're off your game. So I give Oregon a B. It wasn't a great performance, but it was gritty.
Yeah. I mean, I gave Indiana credit last week when they struggled against Michigan, and I kind of got some crap for it. I'm giving Oregon this week credit as well because it was gritty and they did what they had to do. If I'm grading the performance, like I said, B minus. But overall, like, I was impressed that Oregon had things not going well for them this game. And as bad as Dylan Gabriel was, I mean, he wasn't like awful. He wasn't like F, but for his standard with how he's played, he's been bad, right?
Yeah.
He's been good for other quarterback standards, but for his standard, Heisman hopeful, he was not his normal self. And he was still able to make that throw on fourth down, like you said, to Terrence Ferguson, if we're remembering correctly. If we're wrong, please tell us in the chat. But at the end of the day, like, he made the plays he had to do at the end of the game to win it. They were opportunistic, similar to Indiana. They made the plays they had to make to beat Michigan at the end of the game. And so I'm going to give Oregon credit in this one. And I'm more concerned than anything about some of Dan Lanning's decision-making than anything else.
Agreed.
Why in the world are you not just putting it in Jordan James' hand? Why in the world are you not putting it in the hand of Dylan Gabriel when he has come up big for you in that game? I get he wasn't his best in that game, but he has come up big for you. You have to trust your guy. You're going to run a draw, sneak, whatever that was, with the punter? Like, I'm sorry. I'd much rather the ball be in Jordan James' hand than the punter's hand. So... all right, Wisconsin. I'll let you go first with the grade on this one, Wisconsin.
Oh man.
1 for 12 on third down.
Yeah.
8 penalties, 96 passing yards.
That's
my preview of my.
Cause it's like, you look at the score and you're like, Wisconsin almost upset the number one team in the country. Like, it should be a high grade, but yet you look at the stats and you're like, I mean, Braden Locke is Braden Locke. And like, I'm going to say C, and I feel like that's generous because they should have won this game. And I know people talk about the chop block people, but the reality is they did not play good complementary football, and they didn't get off the field on third, or they couldn't sustain drives. And they couldn't put any pressure on the defense. And at the end of the day, I mean, that's what got Phil Longo fired. I mean, it wasn't just this game, but like, it's not good enough for what Wisconsin wants to be.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not good enough. If I was just rating the offense, I'd give them an F. If I was rating the defense, I'd give them an A. Like, so for me, like, that's the hardest part of this. Like, and you know, John's asking, like, how are they gonna see? Wisconsin was in an opportunity to win that game, but they failed to do the things that you do to upset a number one team, right? Like, they didn't win time of possession. They had more penalties than them. They didn't outgain them on the ground. They didn't do better on third down. They didn't get more first downs than them. Like, they had no game control in this one. Like, part of the reason why Wisconsin was in this game was because Oregon was allowing them to stay in this game because they weren't making the normal plays on offense that they normally make, right? And so for me, that's one of the reasons why, like Phillip says it right here, defense A, offense D minus. Like, Wisconsin did everything they could do on defense to stay in this game. Hunter Wohler, amazing game from him. Unfortunately, he got injured and left the game. Hopefully he's okay and hopefully he comes back. I think it was probably a concussion, but I feel so bad for this Wisconsin defense because they did everything they could in that game and the offense just continually let them down time and time and time again, but they just kept getting out there and saying, nope, we're going to stop Oregon. And it just, unfortunately, it wasn't enough because the offense wasn't enough. So for me, I give them... it's probably too generous as well. But when I meet in the middle, I give them a C as well, because the defense was enough to upset the number one team in the country, but the offense was far from enough.
Yeah, I think too. It's one of those. It's I always talk about Vanderbilt in a negative light, so I'm going to talk about them in a positive light. Vanderbilt did what you need to do when you get a team, like a good team, on a bad night for them. And they took advantage of it, right? That's why they beat Alabama. It's like they got they didn't get Alabama's best shot, and they rose up. They rose to the occasion. And you know, you give credit to Oregon for pulling it out when you didn't have your fastball, and you make terrible decisions, but they still, like, Dylan Gabriel recovered. And like, that to me speaks volumes. But for Wisconsin to not, they had a number one win gift wrapped, and they blew it. Like that's how I look at it.
Yeah. The rap guru, I don't think we've ever seen you here before. Thank you for being here. He says, y'all don't give Indiana these excuses. I don't know what show you, I don't know if this is just your first time watching Rap Guru, but we have been very pro Indiana. And last week, I was very much so in the camp of Indiana got a gritty win, and I give them more credit, while everybody else was saying they sucked. So, yeah. You're incorrect. I'm sorry. You know, like I said, you might just be confusing us with another show, but and it's not excuses. We've given Indiana their credit. So we're very pro Indiana here. He says, I love the show. Thank you. We appreciate you. Love the show. Like I said, I think you might be confusing us with somebody else, or maybe something we said, James hasn't. Who's James? James Yoder? I don't know. Terry's sticking up. Says, true. JR is very fair to us. Maybe not Zach, but JR.
I said one thing.
I'm just messing with you.
One thing that got everybody mad at me.
Okay. Rap Guru says, no, not you. Okay. So you must have been talking to somebody else in the chat. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Sorry. Okay. So it's hard to follow the chat sometimes.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Rap Guru. sorry. Sometimes I see the chat and I don't always see what people are talking about.
Sorry. But it's all good. I'm just messing, man.
He's messing with me. He says, Terry says, no, Zach, too. I love that one video when you became the Indiana villain. That was the best.
I think I told you I had somebody follow me on Instagram just to tell me how clueless I was. I was like, what the
heck? Those Indiana fans, man, they're ruthless.
Yeah, I'm terrified. There's one thing. Do you mind if I just go back to one more Oregon thing?
Yeah, one more thing, and then we'll move on to Nebraska.
John was mentioning, like, will Oregon get the travel excuse if they lose in Indy to the Big Ten championship? No. And this is the difference. Like, for Oregon, going to Indy, it's like they have a bye and then they have a home game, and they have 3 weeks to kind of rest up and get recalibrated. This stretch was always going to be hard for them, right? Cause you go to Indy, or you go to West Lafayette, and then you go back home, and then you go to Ann Arbor, and then you go home, and then you go to Madison. It's like, that's three road trips in the span of 28 days in the midst of the heart of the season. And so that's why when I did my preseason picks, I'm like, I don't know if Oregon survives. And of course, Michigan isn't as good as we thought. Wisconsin's not as good as we thought. But this was always going to be a really tough stretch. And so to me, it makes sense that they laid an egg. And they still pulled it out. And I think that means something. Now, if they lay an egg in Indy after 3 weeks of being at home in Autzen, or, you know, resting up, they have no excuse.
Yeah, but I can't imagine they lay an egg, though. Whoever they play in the Big Ten championship, that'll just be a great game. I'm so excited for it. Whether it's Indiana, Ohio State, heck, if Penn State gets there. But Oregon locked up their bid to get there. So whoever they play, boy, it's going to be the best championship game of the championship weekend. It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah. So, there was one question really fast, from Brian. Brian says, just getting here. Not sure if you talked about it, but did you think the Northwestern defender was purposely trying to injure Jeremiah Smith in that long reception? We actually didn't talk about it, and I wanted to bring it up. So thank you, Brian, for reminding us. I felt like he did. Would at least like try to do something to make Jeremiah Smith uncomfortable. I don't know if he was like trying to break his ankle, like some people were saying. That seems like a big accusation for just seeing like a few seconds of TV, but it definitely felt like it was more extracurricular than just a regular play. Now, I do not condone the you know, going after him on social media and like posting his address everywhere and stuff like that. Please don't hear me condone that. I think that is a, you know, Ohio State fans taking it too far. But I definitely think that, you know, the Big Ten needs to do something about that, because there's no place for trying to have extracurricular activity, trying to damage a player or whatever he was trying to do. And it did not look like normal football play. What do you think, Zach?
Are you saying Ohio State fans would take something too far?
Yes. Their own team, constantly.
it's true. Ryan Hamby.
You should have seen how they treated Kyle McCord last year. You did. I'm just saying everybody else.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. We're crazy sometimes. It definitely, like, I hate to be that guy, because Ryan Day is getting this rep of like, oh, he sends something in and there's a rule change. But everything he sent in has actually been valid. And I think he should send something in about this too. Mm-hmm. Because if Jeremiah Smith is hurt because of that next week, like that could legitimately lose them the game next week.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that wasn't a football play. No, like, he's on the ground. You're twisting his, like, I don't know what his intention was. It wasn't a football play. That should have been flagged. And I don't know what they can do, but like, they need to watch out for that. And refs need to be aware of that. And it's not just for Jeremiah Smith, but like for any star player. So I think he's going to be fine. He had a slight limp, but he was out there playing in the fourth quarter. So, but I just don't think it shouldn't be allowed. It wasn't a football play.
Yeah, no, it wasn't at all. Rap Guru asked if we talked about confetti. Philip says confetti, LOL. Signetti is obviously what he means there. We did at the beginning of the episode, we talked about the signing just very briefly. Unfortunately, we have a lot of time to talk about it tonight, but if you go back to the beginning, don't go back now, but go back to the beginning after the show is over and you'll catch us. I think about the 1.5-2 minute mark is where we started talking about it for a few minutes. All right, Zach, our last game. Nebraska, USC. Let's refrain from talking about Matt Rhule while we give our grades, and then we'll get into the Matt Rhule discussion after this. Let's start with USC. USC won the game. USC started Jaden Maiava. I felt better about Maiava's performance than other people did. I gave his performance a B+. I know he had some turnover-worthy throws, but he had 3 touchdowns, and Lincoln Riley had him throwing the ball 35 times, and he was running around for his life back there in the backfield because Nebraska has a good defensive line, and this was a really, really tough game for him to start his first time. It was at home, but at the end of the day, like, this was a really tough game, and they leaned on him a lot, and he came through in a lot of the ways. Like I said, 3 touchdowns in this one. He did have the fumble. He did have the pick 6, so obviously those go against him as well. But overall, like, I mean, USC, 5 penalties in this one. They were 6 of 13 on third down, 3 of 4 in the red zone. They won the time possession battle. They turned the ball over with 2 fumbles in this one. 1 fumble and a pick 6 in this. No, they had 2 fumbles. 1 was a turnover. And then the pick 6 as well. Probably could have some more turnovers, but at the end of the day, USC, they did what they had to do, and they held on for dear life. Get it? Held on. Refereeing joke there at the end. Sorry, Nebraska fans, don't kill me. At the end of the day, they won the game. We can talk about refereeing if we want, but I'm going to give USC a C+ for this one.
Yeah, I think I was thinking B-, C+, somewhere in that range. I'll go B-. They won the game. They're still in good shape to make a bowl game, you know, with USC still on the schedule. Notre Dame is a little trickier, obviously, but it wasn't the greatest performance in the world, but you got to give credit for the Maiava switch. And I think, like, honestly, I think if Miller Moss is in there, because he's not the runner that Maiava is, like, I think Nebraska probably wins this game because of the defensive line performance. So, like, that move pre-game and making that move early so that Maiava could get ready, you know, I panned it. I thought it was a desperate move, but it worked for them despite the mistakes. So, So, but it's, you know, I think Troy says it well. Yeah, USC won the Underachiever Bowl. Like, I think it's like, okay, like they won and they needed that win. And there's a lot of good things about it. And also, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah. I mean, USC won, but it doesn't strike any great confidence in me about USC. You know, Nebraska had opportunities to win this game and they didn't pounce on them. So, going to the Nebraska side for me, like, I mean, I honestly don't feel all that much different about Nebraska than I do USC. Like I give Nebraska a C. I gave USC a C+. I give Nebraska a C. I think Dana Holgorsen was better. I know some, you know, there were a lot of fans that weren't really happy with them. I think that their expectations were maybe a little too high because they thought like he's going to come in and revamp the entire offense. That's just not going to happen in this situation. You didn't have enough time to do that. You have a freshman quarterback. I think that Nebraska fans are being a little too harsh on Dylan Raiola. Like, you know, they're talking about benching him for Heinrich Harburg. I talked about it a little bit last night on the Power Rankings show. Like, you do understand how bad Heinrich Harburg is, right? Like, we've seen bad from him. Dylan Raiola at least has a future to, like, you know, grow and continue. Like, I get why people are upset with him. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to say Dylan Raiola is, like, this great quarterback or anything. I think he has the potential to turn into one. I think Heinrich Harburg is just what Heinrich Harburg is. He's going to turn the ball over. He's going to be inaccurate. And he's going to, I mean, he's going to throw for you at times. Run for you at times. It's a running threat. But at the end of the day, like, I think, unfortunately, from Nebraska, this is just what the season is for them right now. It's unfortunate. I hate it for them because I really want Nebraska to get that bowl game. I really want Matt Rhule to succeed. I like Matt Rhule a lot. But if I have to give him a grade, it's a C.
Did I see Heinrich Harburg in on the last series?
Of this game?
Yeah. I thought I saw him in on the first play of the last series. And then they put Raiola back in.
Let me check the snap counts really fast. Go ahead and talk and I'll check the snap counts.
Because if that's what I saw, it's an F. Because you cannot do that with a young quarterback. Everything you said, I totally agree with. Harburg is not a Nebraska quarterback, Nebraska's caliber quarterback. There's no reason why you should be playing musical quarterbacks. None.
He did have 3 snaps in this game. So
that's 3 snaps too many.
Yeah.
And I don't care that Raiola threw 2 picks. I get it. He's not, but this is a failure by Nebraska on every level. And it's, for me, it's more macro level. And part of it, I'm a little miffed because this was my upset pick of the year earlier in the season. I said, Nebraska is going to beat USC. So part of me is a little upset about this, but I mean this when I say F, not for just for this game, but the culmination of this, because they've let Indiana and Ohio State beat them 4 times now. Like, that's really what this is. They got crushed by Indiana and they have not recovered. And that's an indictment. And maybe this is a good lead into the rule stuff, but that's an indictment on this coaching staff because you have not gotten out of your own way.
Nice transition.
Yeah.
I really struggle with this question. I almost didn't even want to make it a topic because, like, my thoughts are going to kind of be all over the place here. Because I understand why Nebraska fans are questioning if Matt Rhule is the guy. I mean, if I was a Nebraska fan, I'd probably be questioning the same thing. But we've also seen so many coaches do this. We've also seen so many coaches lose the close games at Nebraska that, like, I think you have to look at what Matt Rhule has done and say the future is more promising with him than what it was with Scott Frost, what it was with the other coaches, right? Like, I get he had family and that helps, but, like, Matt Rhule brought you in a 5-star quarterback. Like, one of the best quarterbacks in the country in the recruiting class. He brought him in, and he started in year 1, which to me was a gutsy thing to do, but it's what should have been done, right? He fired his offensive coordinator, who obviously needed to be fired. he didn't just fire him. He went out and got somebody else, brought him in as an analyst, and a week later made him the offensive coordinator. Like, that's a bold move by Matt Rhule. And just, like, listening to Matt Rhule talk, I get that, like, not everybody will get this, but just go listen to a press conference by Matt Rhule for a minute. Like, I listened to that guy for 5 minutes, and I'm just like, I would run, I would march anywhere for this dude. The leader that he is, and the confidence that he bestows upon his team, and the way that he coaches football, and what he wants for these guys, and everything. Like, there's just so much about Matt Rhule that I really, really love, and I want the best for, but I'm also like, is it Matt Rhule, or is it just Nebraska?
Yeah.
Because I'm leaning, it's just Nebraska. Which sucks, because I don't want to do that to Nebraska. I don't want to say that, but if I'm being honest, like, that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I'll push back just a little bit for a couple reasons. One is that so this is not me saying fire Matt Rhule. I just want to be very, very clear. I'm not there yet. I won't be there yet, even if they miss a bowl game, which I think is becoming more and more like reasonable to expect that they miss a bowl game. They have Iowa and Wisconsin. Both of those they can win, by the way. Like, they're not, I'm not saying they will lose both of those games. They're both winnable. I think Wisconsin is going to be I think that's going to be an interesting game, especially with Longo out now.
Don't you get the feeling like both coaches are kind of coaching for their job?
Yeah. And I feel like Fickell and Rhule are actually both in similar situations. And here's my caveat with Rhule is that I think Matt Rhule, I think he's a really good coach, but he's never had a program with the prestige of Nebraska, and he's never coached in a conference like this Big Ten, which we're seeing a lot of teams that I think would, you know, in the old Big Ten might get away with being 7-4, 8, you know, or 7-5, 8-4, like Michigan this year. You can't, because you've got a lot of good teams, some that are not as good but are punching above their weight. And then you have others that that are elite teams, like in Oregon, like Ohio State. This conference is a lot better from top to bottom than I think people realized. Right. And so Matt Rhule has never coached in an atmosphere like this outside of the NFL. And he was not good in the NFL. So I think there's a question that still remains of, like, I think Matt Rhule still is the guy. And I think he hired a bad staff, particularly offensively. And he should have fired Satterfield, you know, right after the end of last season. And he didn't. And I think that is what ultimately has held them back from a schematic standpoint. But he has done way more than Scott Frost ever did to kind of energize the program. But I don't think he's on the hot seat, but I think you look at this and you're like, okay, what's changed?
Yeah.
And that would be my biggest question is, like, has anything, I think things have fundamentally changed in terms of structure, but the results have not changed. And so the question is, okay, have all those changes that Rhule has brought, do they result in more wins by year three? If not, you got to let them go.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with this one, because we've seen Matt Rhule get success in year three. Primarily, right? We've seen Matt Rhule really struggle in year one at both Baylor and Temple. Really struggle year one, and then year two, he's around 500, which he's around right now in this one. Still has the opportunity to make a bowl game. Let's not count him out yet. They have Wisconsin and at Iowa next, and those are both winnable games. I think, you know, Iowa's much more likely that they'll lose that one than Wisconsin, but they're both winnable games for them. And at the end of the day, like, we can't count him out yet. Because I agree with you. I do think this program is in a better place. And for me, like, that's why I'm like, you can't fire him this season.
Yeah.
You have to give him at least one more year to see, like,
yeah,
he in the past, year three is when he's gotten those 8-9 win teams.
Yeah, 10.
Does he bring it in year three? You know, at least 7 wins. At least 7 wins in year three. I think the biggest issue was that you had the 5-star quarterback. You were 5-1. You beat Colorado, and everybody was just so high on the program that it set these expectations for, like, well, we're going to be a 9-win football team, you know? And I think that everyone should have realized those expectations were too high, but we all kind of bought into them. I mean, you and I did, right? We thought, oh, Nebraska, this is a really good team. They could – Tony White's a good defense coordinator, and, you know, maybe they can get through it without the without the offense.
Well, but that's where I'm like, were those expectations too high? Because I look at, again, I look at the schedule that they've played thus far. They should have beat Illinois. That's a win. Yeah. Right?
They should have beat them.
They should have beat Ohio State. Like, if we're being completely honest.
Yeah, Dylan Rilla missed throws to win that game at the end of it. Yeah.
Yeah. They should have beat UCLA. Like, that was a winnable game. Like, that's 3 wins. They'd be 8-2 right now.
Or if they get at least one of those 3.
Yeah, if they got one of those 3, they're 6-4.
Yeah, and they're bowl eligible.
So I'm not saying maybe 9 wins was a little like jumping the shark, but, and you know, I think the rap, he's, you know, the rap guru is saying, we're not blaming Matt. We're absolutely blaming Matt.
Yeah.
Like, and I think his failure was sticking with Satterfield.
Yeah.
More than anything else. Like, that's his grave that he's buried. And, you know, he cut bait. I don't know if Holgorsen's the answer. I think similar, like, he's got to figure out who he wants them to be, especially if they can keep Raiola, which I think that's a big deal. It's like, can you keep Raiola with, you know, if you go 5-7 again?
He's transferred everywhere he's gone, so who knows? Yeah. I mean, it could happen this year. You got a Nebraska fan in the chat, Vince. He says, as a Nebraska fan, the fans are on the cusp of running another coach with their need for instant gratification and are going further into the dumpster instead of trusting the process. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. You know, like, I get the frustration with Matt Rhule. I get the expectation of, like, we were 5-1 and we just lost, what is it, 4 or 5 games straight, however much it is, like, yeah. 4 games straight. I get all of that. But I'm also like, give him one more year. Like, trust that Matt Rhule is going to turn this thing around, because historically, Matt Rhule has turned it around in year 3. And if it pays off, great. If it doesn't pay off, this is probably where you would be with a new coach anyway. Like,
yeah.
I hate playing this card, but, like, let's just be completely honest for a second. Like, who are you going to get that's going to get you 9 wins next year? Kirk Cignetti's don't just, you know, fall off trees, yeah. Like, or grow on trees, whatever that saying is.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. I do think though, it would behoove Matt Rhule to adopt more of a Cignetti type attitude next year. Like, you cannot play, well, we're still building. Like, I feel like the first 2 years you're building the foundation, but he needs to come in like almost, I don't think he said it, but it was like, we're going to, like, they were confident that they were going to beat Colorado, and they did, and they beat them soundly. And now, you know, we forget that they beat Colorado, who's on the cusp of winning the Big 12. That's like, that's what they can do. Now, can they stack on that? And like, I feel like that's, we can't play next year, well, we're still building to be a good team. No, you need to be the good team that you said you were going to be.
Right.
And I think he needs to bring that attitude and bring that attitude, not just for himself, but the players. Bring in transfers like that too. Like, who are the transfers you can get, like a guy like an Elijah Surratt, like a Curtis Rourke, where you're like, we're going to inject a winning attitude and production into this squad to help us get there.
And the other piece of it that you always have to consider, it's not fun for fans to consider, but Matt Rhule's buyout. $62 million.
That's
the other piece of it too. Like, we can rant and rave all we want on, like, they should fire him, they shouldn't fire it. Like, I think we have to, like, we have to understand in this new world of college football where the schools are going to be paying players. Like, and I've seen people talk about Franklin and Billy Napier in the chat and all that stuff. Like, I fully get that. But, like, in this new world of college football, you are not going to see as many firings of head coaches. You're going to be seeing a lot more firings of coordinators than you will head coaches because of the buyouts. Mm-hmm. Now, that will probably change in the future because they'll probably restructure the buyouts to be easier. But right now, you've got 20, 30, in this case, $60 million buyouts for coaches that teams would like to move on from and fans would like to move on from. The point is, like, you're just not going to – you're not going to be able to pay $62 million and then next year pay $20 million to your roster as well. Like,
yeah.
I know it's the Big Ten. Like, the Big Ten has a lot of money, but – not that much.
Right. Well, and I think it goes back to, I think, where we both are, is that, like, this is a disappointment. But Matt Rhule is not a guy, like, the guy that I said they needed to fire way before, and I think we both were agreement on this, was Scott Frost. And the reason is because you could see the writing on the wall everywhere he went. Like, the reputation, the attitude, like, it just seemed like you could see the energy had been sucked out of the program and out of the boosters and all that. With Rhule, I think the results are disappointing, but everything around it still, I think, is good. And I think that's what you got to give them another year. If nothing else, to be like, hey, we've invested this money. We can't, you know. If we fire him, we're leveling the whole thing again.
Yeah, I think you make a good point there. If, like, the program was in a spot where, like, players were quitting, they were actively sitting out and stuff like that, entering the transfer portal, yeah. But you're right. The program is not in a spot where it's toxic right now. I'm not going to say it's in a great spot, but it's not a spot where it's toxic right now. The results just aren't on the field, so... Yeah.
Just as an aside, my dog just came into the room, so that's
why. All right.
There was a
Big Ten huddle dog appearance. Yeah, yeah, what's the dog's name?
Angel.
Oh, there we go.
So that's
welcome,
that's...
Angel. Well, Angel, we'd like to get your thoughts on Kirby Smart if you have any of them.
Dog, as Doug LaMaurice would say, dog mentality, right?
Yeah. All right, so here's what happened, folks. After the game against Tennessee, Kirby Smart gets interviewed on the field, and he didn't call anybody an idiot this time. That was just reserved for his own players when he doesn't like, you know, when they're on the field after the game. Not the driving stuff. That doesn't make you idiots, but, you know, the being on the field after the game when the other team is celebrating, that makes you an idiot. Yeah. He said, well, I don't know because I don't know what they look for when asked about the College Football Playoff Committee and having them ranked at 12. He said, I really don't know what they look for anymore, so I would welcome anyone in that committee to come down to this league and play in this environment. It's a tough place to play. Essentially, like, I can't play the clip for you because it's got copyright, ESPN, all that stuff, but essentially that was the quote right there where he's talking about the College Football Playoff Committee and telling them, like, you want to rank us that low, come try playing in this conference and talk, and, you know, talking about how hard it's. This is nothing new for Kirby Smart. Kirby Smart has been pumping up the SEC for some time now because he knew this day was coming where he would no longer be in, what was it, the SEC East, where he would have the easiest schedule in the world, where he would face Alabama in the regular season, like once every 4 years. He knew that this day was coming, and so he pumped up the SEC for years and years and years. Now, there are no more divisions. He's actually having to play every hard SEC team and not just the SEC East, and it's come to bite him in the butt. Now, he did beat Tennessee, obviously, give him credit there, but Georgia has lost to Alabama and Ole Miss, and Kirby Smart is not too happy about being ranked 12th. Now, they'll probably be in the top 10 this week because they beat Tennessee, but overall, he's not happy. What do you think about Kirby Smart's comments about the College Football Playoff Committee, Zach?
I think he needs to spend more time actually figuring out why his players can't drive the speed limit. Like,
yeah.
I don't mean that as a joke. I mean that as I've lost all respect for him. Like,
yeah.
Listen, he got angry at a player because he saw his friends on the field and he called him an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, there's no excuse for this behavior. None. Like, this is a man who is supposed to be molding men. And instead, he finds time to address the playoff committee, which honestly had a reasonable reason to rank them 12th.
Yep.
And it's not just him. It's all of ESPN who does nothing to hold him accountable, but they just whine and complain. How could Georgia be 12th? Like, because they lost. Okay. Who cares? Actually hold him accountable. This is absurd. Like, granted, before anyone accuses me of being an SEC hater or a Georgia hater.
You kind of are, but go ahead.
Well, no, like.
We both are.
The fact that, like, they have a reason. Like, they're number one in the strength of schedule, right?
Yeah.
And that's different this year. And that should be taken into account. And the reality is they beat Tennessee. They should certainly be in the playoff if they finish 10-2. Like, that's my caveat. My issue is not with that argument. My issue is, what are the priorities of this man? Like, what are the priorities of the press at this point? Because all we've done is complain about, why isn't Georgia in the playoff? People, like, literally died. What are we doing?
Well, I mean, you can see evidence of just the way he interacts with other players and the way he coaches his team, right? I mean, you literally had a Georgia player punch a Tennessee player on the field right after a play in this game. The refs didn't do anything. Kirby Smart didn't do anything. He didn't say anything about it. You know, he gets questions after the game. He doesn't say anything about, like, yeah, my player punched somebody else and there's no room for that, yada, yada, yada. What does he do? Instead, he calls out the College Football Playoff Committee, because this man has no values, like you said, of molding them into young men and doing a good job with them. Like, his values are win at all costs, and that's it. Which, like, sure, that's going to get you in the record books. That is going to get you in the record books. But you're going to have players on your team die along the way, like they already have. And you're going to have players on your team ruin their lives along the way, like they already have. I mean, it's not just the driving incidents now. Like, you literally had a guy on your team. I forget exactly what the crime was, but it was like something against children. He doesn't come out and call him an idiot, but he calls the guy on his team that was celebrating on the field. Like, he has to come out with an apology on social media, but the other guys don't. Like, it just, this is a program that is going to get all of the hype from ESPN and everybody else because it makes them money. But at the end of the day, there is no room for a program like this in college football. There is no room for a coach like this in college football. And if the SEC had any kind of backbone to actually have respect for their conference and for being a conference that is actually trying to do a good job with their young men and not just win championships, they would act on this, and they would tell Kirby Smart, you need to suspend players. You need to come out and publicly reprimand these players. But they don't, because ESPN, the SEC, they don't care about that stuff. I've lost all respect for them. I've lost all respect for Kirby Smart at this point, because he is more willing to come out and call out the College Football Playoff Committee for a ranking he doesn't like, rather than his players for driving the way he doesn't like, or treating children the way he doesn't like. He would rather call it the College Football Playoff Committee and his own player for celebrating the way he doesn't like, rather than those who break the law.
Yep. Yeah. I want to just address the Penn State guy.
Great point, Billy. It just means more.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Well, I was going to say, the Penn State guy said he probably can't comment on legal stuff. He certainly can comment on the culture, and, like, he can certainly say, we have no room for this, and we need to nip it in the bud. Like, that's all he would have to say. And he doesn't address it. The media, the Georgia beat doesn't push him on it. Like, I think that's even the more frustrating thing. This has happened so many times, and you never hear anything about it other than, on the ticker, and that's it. It's like, what are we doing? You know, he can certainly comment on someone punching a player in game. He can certainly comment on
him on pushing another player, like, on another team.
Right. Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah. There's so many things that he's done that we forget about some of the things that he's done.
Right.
Like that's how egregious this is becoming. And so I know the question is like, is it okay that he said this about the playoff? Every coach politics, I mean, he learned it from the best of him with Nick Saban. And you know what? Right. Saban got rewarded with it, but also then Saban backed it up, right? You know, and so I'm not going to – and Saban actually played in that hard division of the SEC. But that – I digress. I don't mind the – like, coaches are going to politic, okay? I think what bothers me more about it is you have real problems in your program – and you know that if you win out, you're in. Like, it's a television show. Like,
right.
That's what the rankings are. It's a television show. So just shut up, win your games, and you'll be in. Like, you control your own destiny. Right. But instead, he's going to go after it. And part of it's ESPN pandering and ESPN asking the question. So I get he's set up for it. I would care more, but I would give him the benefit of the doubt if he actually addressed real things, and he doesn't. Time and time again.
Yeah. No, I completely agree. I don't think it's so much like, is the quote bad or anything like that? It's just all the context around the quote of being willing to go out of your way to, and I get he was asked about it, right? Like, but being willing to expand on the idea of like the College Football Playoff Committee and their ranking of us and stuff like that. Like, most coaches, when they're asked about that, they're like, you know, we don't pay attention to that. We're just focused on winning our games and yada, yada, yada. You know, Kirby, instead, he talks about it and he goes into a long detailed discussion about it when he won't do that about the players on his team that have broken the law, which I get. You know, you can't, you know, Penn State guys, right? You can't talk about those individual situations, but he can still talk about the culture of the team. You know, yeah. We don't want to have players on our team breaking the law. We are going to enforce punishments of suspensions for players who break the law, that kind of stuff. Like, he doesn't have to talk about the individual situations. Yeah. He can just talk about the culture of the team overall. But, yeah. You know, and I get they did. I think they did dismiss the one player, but you still never really heard anything about it. So yeah. That's more my complaint. So, yeah. Anyway, any other thoughts on that, Zach, before we get out of here?
Yeah, I'm a little fiery, and I think it's hard because I think we get so caught up in the fandoms and the, I don't know how to say it. It's easy to forget about real life because football is meant for us as fans to be an escape. But there's real life things that are happening that go beyond this. And I think that's the frustration of all of this.
Well, and that's one of the things about college football that makes it different from NFL, right? Like, you are coaching players. I mean, how many times did the NCAA put it on a commercial? Like, 95% of them won't go, they'll go pro at something other than sports and life or whatever, like, whatever they used to say. When it becomes all about winning and getting to the NFL, and that's all it is, like, I know I'm an Ohio State homer, it's fine, but like, when Ryan Day, after the game, they're talking about Carnell Tate. If you don't know Carnell Tate, he's from Chicago. He just played his first game in Chicago in his career, and his mom died last year. And that was kind of a big talk going into this one. His father and his sisters were at the game. We didn't really talk about it much because that's more of like a conversation for an Ohio State podcast, not a Big Ten one. But I'm just giving you the context of, like, after the game, they asked Ryan Day about it, and he said, you know, football doesn't care what you've gone through, but we do. The players do, the coaches do, and we're here for him. And, like, I don't know. Like, that's what I want to hear from my head coach. I get it. You know, some people say it's soft, whatever. But that's what I want to hear from my head coach, is, like, he actively cares about the players on his team. Not just do they win me football games, but are they okay personally? Are they making it? You know, what are their lives going to look like? And I just don't get that vibe from Kirby at all.
And, I mean, we're not in that locker room. We're not. So, like, there's always, you know, we don't see everything. I just wish, I wish we saw it from Kirby, and I have not, we haven't seen an iota of it at this point. And I think that's frustrating.
Yeah. John, way to make an emotional moment come back. Too bad they're losing to the Well, don't worry. You can come back here on Tuesday night at 9 o'clock as we will be previewing that game. Zach and I will be giving our picks for the Indiana-Ohio State game. Famously, in these big games, Zach and I have picked differently. In the Oregon game, Zach picked Oregon. I picked Ohio State. In the Penn State game, I picked Ohio State. Zach picked I picked Penn State. Zach picked Ohio State. So Zach's predictions have been much more on point than mine have in these big games. But we're going to preview it. We're going to talk about it. Keys to victory for both teams. What needs to happen. What stuff is going to be most interesting to us. I can promise you we'll probably spend at least 15 minutes on that one game by itself. Because there's just so much to talk about with that game. It's a huge game for Indiana. It's a huge game for Ohio State. It's just going to be a really, really fun game to talk about, and I can't wait. Zach, you excited for Tuesday night?
I am. You lean in a certain direction, or are you still?
I said it on the Ohio State postgame show. Right now, I am leaning Ohio State, but I'm not confident in that. Yeah. Where are you leaning?
I'm probably close to that. I think Indiana is a bigger threat than Penn State was.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I think, and I'm not confident that the offensive line is fixed.
Yeah, I'm not either. I think that Indiana has one of the best pass rushes in run defense as well. If you see what they did against Michigan, like if you actually watch what their defensive line did, it was pretty incredible what they did.
Yeah.
So yeah, John, I'm definitely nervous about the game. Very nervous.
Yeah, terrified.
Yeah.
Terrified.
I think it's going to be a really, really good game. I think Indiana's going to bring all they got. I think Ohio State is going to, you know, do everything they can, but especially with Indiana having a bye week to prepare, yeah, I think it's going to be a really, really good game.
And they believe. They believe without a shadow of a doubt that they can win.
Yeah. Doug Shepard's exactly right. Kamara concerns me. He is a beast, dude. He is a beast.
Mm-hmm. John Jacobs, don't you put that juju on me. Don't you do that.
I love it. Zach, what's going on? Big Ten football talk. Got anything going on you want to talk about?
So as I mentioned, I just interviewed Sammy from Hoosier Huddle talking about the season, talking about just the contract extension, even kind of how the Indiana fans are taking the haters like Finebaum and all them. It was great. We had a great conversation. We talked about his prediction on what he thinks is going to happen this weekend. So I'll post either Tuesday or Thursday, and then I might do a bonus episode to talk more about the absurdity that is coming from the four-letter network. We'll see if I have time.
There's a lot of absurdity. It could be an hour-long episode if you wanted it to be.
Yeah. Just with me, it could be an hour long. If I brought you... Or if I brought you
2 hours. Aaron, if it's both of us, man.
It's both of us. Black out the whole day. Take vacation. Yeah. It's 24 hours nonstop.
For sure. And we do need to mention this. John says, IU recruited a four-star safety who's the fourth highest rated recruit in the history. Yeah. Baldwin Jr. Was it Brian Baldwin? I think it was his first name. Great pickup for Indiana. I think it shows that Kirk Cignetti, he's not only going to bring the coaching on the field and stuff like that, he's going to be a good recruiter as well. And I think he's got a staff full of good recruiters. I think the biggest thing now is keeping that staff intact throughout the offseason. We'll see what Cignetti can do, because he's going to have a lot of people calling his staff, because it's a really, really good staff.
Yep.
So, all right, Zach, let's get out of here. We're over an hour and a half. We will be back here Tuesday night. Basketball. Kent and I will be live tomorrow morning. I told you 9 last night. Unfortunately, we did have to switch that. We are going to be live at 10 a.m. on the basketball channel doing our basketball power rankings. So just like we do the power rankings on Saturday night for football, we are going to be doing a Power Rankings basketball show like that. It'll be probably about 40 minutes, and I'll be doing it live from work, so you'll get to see my office and everything. It was the same place I live streamed from when I first started this podcast, so if you've been around since day one, shout out to Philip. You'll have seen it, but yeah, if you are into that kind of stuff, go over to Big Ten Huddle Dash Basketball. Go follow over there, and you can get our Power Rankings episode. So good nice. Stuff, everybody. Appreciate you being here, Zach. Appreciate you as always. We will be back Tuesday night. Have a good one, everybody. Yep. See ya.
Thanks, guys.